This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
All right, welcome to the Underground, everybody. Cool. Cool. That music was amazing, wasn't that? Thank you, guys. All right, well, I don't know how many of you were here last week, you know, share a lot of stuff about my own life, get real personal. Sometimes I go home, I'm like, I can't believe I told them all that stuff, you know. But I just want you to know, when it comes to my own testimony, my own story, I look really, really terrible. I look really bad. And that's just true in my story. But I want you to know, God looks really, really good in my testimony. And I love to share that. I love to share that. And I want that to be really out there. I'm not afraid to say that. You know, we're going to be gone next week. We're leaving right here from here, going to Hawaii for 10 days to celebrate our 10th anniversary. Yeah! So, I mean, I'm just going to put on the beach shorts and just start running for the waves. It's going to be really fun. Sorry about that image. But anyway, I just want you to know, like, you know, my sponsor is back here, Dave, and his wife, Lori, and all that they've walked me through and all the conversations we've had and all that the Underground is, the accountability, all of it. Just this vacation itself and all that it is a testimony to all that teamwork and all that God activity in my own life. And I'm just super, super thankful for all of it. Anyway, so last week, talked a little bit about, was pulling from the Genesis process book some, or very heavily, talking about the protective personality or the false self, where, you know, we all probably can relate in some way where at some point in our lives, you come to the conclusion, you know, what I am or who I am is not going to be enough. You know, I'm going to have to develop kind of a false self out here in order for me to survive, because this ain't going to cut it. And that's a tough thing, you know, to have to develop a false front or a false self. When would a person discover that isolation, self-soothing is the answer to their problems? I mean, when does that kind of thing happen to a person, right? When does it happen in a person's life when they realize being vulnerable and having needs and getting my needs met from people that love me and out here, when does a person learn that that's not safe? I mean, childhood, going to school, that could be pretty traumatic. Going to church, you know, a lot of us learned it there. But we develop a false front or a mask, in a sense, to try to bring ourselves up to some kind of level of acceptability in some way. And that whole kind of thinking really began back in the garden when an enemy came along and began to plant the idea and the seeds and the lie that, hey, what God has provided is not enough. Who he says you are, who he is, what he's provided, all he's given you, nope, that's not enough. You need something more. And the whole idea, you can see the pattern, is to focus on the negative, focus on what you perceive is missing, and then what you see as the answer to what is missing usually ends up being our big downfall, ends up being what destroys our lives. And so we see in this that the root of sin, what we call sin, to use a religious term or a term that a lot of people aren't comfortable with, the root of sin is unbelief. Not believing God, what he's provided for me, what he's done for me, who he says I am, who he is. Unbelief. And the scripture tells us not to let sin reign in your mortal body. And you know, when Stan lets unbelief reign in his mortal body, like, in other words, I don't believe I'm a son of God. I don't believe I'm secure in his love. I don't believe I'm really significant. When I let unbelief reign in my mortal body, guess what comes out? Sins, plural, comes out of sin. That's kind of how it operates. In whatever way, the specific way it manifests in your life or mine, that's kind of how it operates, and we see that. And it's crazy because what I talked about last week about when I discovered like the Superman pills, you know, and this whole false identity I lived out for many, many years, we discovered that the false self ends up being the one that's worthless. You know, that's the one that's the mess, you know, that's not even real. God doesn't relate to my false self. Other people don't relate to that person. In fact, people didn't start really relating to me until I got real. You know, wow, what have I been waiting for, right? So the false self is the one that ends up not having worth and value. And that's kind of strange. I mean, it used to be so simple. It used to be as simple as a walk with God in the cool of the day. That's how simple it used to be. Isn't that crazy? It used to be a walk in the cool of the day with the most important person that ever was, ever will be, the highest authority, with the biggest, broadest shoulders, who was my dad. It used to be that simple, just a walk in the cool of the day with my father. That's how simple it used to be, right? And all of our habits that we have that we want to break, our addictions or our patterns or the cycles, they all have a pattern that's similar that can kind of be tracked. If you really want to get after it, it can be tracked. I like to think of myself as becoming the world's leading expert on my own patterns and cycles so that I can overcome them. And the reason I want to overcome them is God's called me to love people, and those things just happen to be in the way of me doing that, right? So I want to get those things. And I want to get them down so well, I want to number them. I want to be able to number my cycle. You know, cycle 1, 2, 3, you know, stage 1, 2, 3. I want to be able to like write them on the floor. 1, 2, 3. Oh, I'm in 3. Look out, you know, very clear. You know, mayday, mayday, right? Because I know if I get to 5, cops are on their way, you know, at least with my problems, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe for you it's just like a bottle of Tums or something. I don't know. But for me, it's cops, right? So what's attached to most of our habits and addictions and problems, heavily attached, would be shame. Shame is almost always, always a strong element. It's actually what the enemy came along and sown in Adam and Eve. It was a sense of shame, of not being enough. And shame is painfully negative on our hearts. We're not made for shame. I mean, I've talked about before, I remember, you know, growing up, being a little Japanese boy, you know, a little goofy boy. I can show you pictures, you'd say, goofy boy, right, for sure. I never really knew how skinny I was until I got around other people, kids, until I got around other kids. And then everyone seemed to just find it so important to announce, you know, how skinny that I was, and it became a real painful thing, right? I mean, it just ended up being a reality that I had to live with. All right, let me see if I have a joke about being skinny. I'm so skinny, my pajamas have one stripe. All right. All right, maybe I won't go into the jokes. I'm so skinny, if I put a quarter on my head, I look like a nail. Yeah, I like that one. I could hang glide with a Dorito. I like the Dorito one. That's kind of cool. Okay, let's get serious here. I'm so thin. One time someone slapped me and they got a paper cut. All right. You know, it's funny, as I was telling them at North Star the other day, that my brother, he's this big old dude. He got like all the genetics, you know, from my mom and dad, whatever, but I was left with just scraps, you know. My brother's this big old, he looks like a superhero. I mean, he's this big old muscular guy. And he started going bald, you know, totally true. And he was like, you know, my hair's not making a fool of me, you know. So he shaved his head. And what was the result? He looked super cool. He looked even tougher, right? He looks just like The Rock, you know. He's got this eye patch. I mean, he just looks super bad, right? So I start losing my hair. I'm like, hey, you know, same deal. You know, I'm going to be hard, right? So I shaved my head. What was the result? I looked like I was in some kind of radioactive accident, guys. Really. People saw me, they're like, dude, are you okay? Are you feeling well? I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just so cold. Just cold. So I ended up walking with shame, right? And we carry this in many ways. Maybe you don't go places around certain people. You don't do a lot of things because you feel so inferior around people. Or you feel so intimidated by people. You can't go places, can't go do things. You tend to isolate, especially from the ones you love the most. Wow, that one hit hard. Your public face and public presentation are very different than how you are privately. And we can go on to a big old shame list that many of us would identify with. But overall, when it comes down to is you carry a deep sense of worthlessness deep down inside, right? How many guys sit with me and basically what comes out is I just don't think I'm good enough. I'm not good enough, right? And I hear this from women. I hear this from men. I'm not enough or I don't matter. All these things come out. And guys, we have a pain threshold. You can only sit in worthlessness so long, right? You can only sit in this, I don't matter, I'm not good enough, I'm ashamed, I'm inferior. You can only sit, I'm telling you, you can only sit in that so long before there's a part of our brains and part of our psyche that says, I must get out of this experience, at least for a little while. I got to get out of this. And you do, right? And there's the big number one on the floor. Boom. The cue or the trigger, right? And people talk about that in addiction, know your triggers, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you're in a recovery, it is so tricky to be triggered. It's way more subtle than what people ever really explain or what you hear. Triggers are really, really subtle. I saw a whole documentary on this crack addict, and they had this little film of pictures and things flashing, and they had like 3/1000th of a second or something, a picture of crack cocaine go by while he was watching a cartoon, and they had them all monitored up. He could have never seen it, but his subconscious saw it, and he spiked. He was triggered, and he didn't even know it. Like, he didn't even see it, didn't even know that was in there, and bam, it showed it on their little thing. Like, wow, check it out. We are triggered. It is so subtle. It's so tricky. I know guys that talk to me, and it'll be something along the lines of they go to a bank, and there's a teller, and she's beautiful, and she smells great, and he does his little transaction. He walks away triggered because in his heart, you know, no real woman would ever love him or respect him. And he walks away not even knowing that he's triggered and he's off to the next stage type thing. Or people that get a promotion, someone comes along and says, great job, good job, keep up the good work, and they walk away triggered from a good thing because you just wait, I'm going to let you down. It's coming. And so we get triggered by all kinds of things, good things, bad things, all this stuff. And to pay attention to how subtle it is. I mean, this is tricky stuff. And those of you that know, walking in an addiction, it's like, how did that even happen? Like, I mean, how did that happen? It's that tricky. And I really, really pay attention to what's going on in my inner life. So let's just say the trigger happens. There's the first number on the floor, the cue or the trigger. A person begins to enter then the realm of their habit, their pattern, their addiction, their behavior. And what I mean by the realm of it, they begin the ritual, right? They start looking through the cupboards for the food, maybe, if it's food. They start getting their credit cards together to go shopping, right? They just start moving towards isolating, heading towards the 28 pounds of chocolate, you know, or whatever they're heading towards. Some people will start in the fantasy mode, and they start thinking fantasy, right? And so this is what we call being in the bubble. Now they're in the bubble because they've left reality And now they're in the realm of their habit, their addiction, and they are beginning to disassociate. See what I mean? If I'm in my fantasy, if I'm starting to look through the cupboards, you know, if I'm starting to go into it, I'm now leaving reality, true connection's gone, I'm disassociating, I'm in my bubble. And what I'm thinking is, you know, if I had this relationship or this situation or was, you know, this important or felt this kind of comfort, whatever it is that their problem is, they begin entering into things that are symbolic of what the real need is. I mean, the 28 pounds of chocolate is symbolic of something else. It's a symbol of something else. The spending, the whatever it is, there's something else that represents. And a person in addiction, and it's so easy for me to talk about this because I've just lived this my whole life, and a lot of you will connect with this, is that you're high before you're even high, right? If I get triggered and I decide I'm going to go use, I call my dealer up, and he doesn't have anything. Sorry, I got nothing. Go away. I actually go into some serious distress. I mean, I'm actually really hurting now. There's nothing, you know. But if I call him up, he's got it. He's on the way. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Whoa, I'm actually experiencing a high. While the person's looking through the cupboards, if it's food, they're already getting there. It's already starting to happen internally. All this stuff's happened. I lived in a crack house for a while in Florida, and I remember when the dealer was on its way, all the toilets were flushing. Everyone's going to the bathroom. I mean, the nerves are going crazy because you're high before you're high. That's kind of how it works. So stage one, you're triggered. There's a cue. It's subtle. It's subconscious, guys. Two, you go into the bubble. You're disassociating. You're in the realm of habit. The next one would be that you actually use, you actually do it. You cram the food, you spend the money, you act out, you do whatever, you get on the computer, whatever it is. And whatever that behavior is, that behavior translates as acceptance or love or significance. It translates into whatever that is, that nurture, that soothing. A lot of times people smoke or they eat. There's that mouth. It's connected to the mouth. There's that soothing, that nurture that they're trying to recreate. There's a lot of things connected with what we do, how we do it. The fantasies we tend towards tell us a picture of what we're trying to solve. And it can get really graphic, but we're actually trying to fix something. In one way or another, we're trying to make the experience real. Like, I'm going to make this something I feel and something I actually experience in some way. I'm going to make this work for me. So we went from no control, like leaving the bank teller or being triggered, feeling worthless, no control, to having control, right? In my mind, I can make people feel about me any way I want. So now I have control. I can make people just love me to death, right? So no control, to now I act out, and I'm bonding with this behavior. Like the chemicals that are released, my brain says, whatever that is, that's it, that's the stuff, and I actually chemically bond with it. And so that's the realm of addiction. That's the habit, that's the pattern. Does that make sense to everybody? So we're triggered, we go into the realm or the bubble, we actually act out, and then the next number on the floor is we go into despair, we go into self-hatred, deep inner conflict and condemnation. And guys, in that mess, in that horror, in that kind of discouragement, that's the crime scene, guys, where the seeds of deeper shame are sown freely. And the confirmation, you really are worthless. And you can grow very fertile in that ground because you're completely cut off, you're isolated, and look around you, look at what you've actually done. I mean, that has been most of my life, guys. Okay, most people make most of their talk that. 90% of the talk is that. And then you're left with the last 5 minutes of, you know, if that's you, go join a 12-step group. You know, good night, everybody. And you're like, you know, that's terrible. And I'm not going to do that to you. Okay? Jesus came and said that you'll know the truth, and what? The truth will set you free. He really said that. He really meant that. Did you know he really meant that? That's as true as if he said it 1 minute ago, as if he said it right here. The truth will set you free. He really meant that, and it really is true. And he came to give us life, and life what? Abundantly. That's real stuff. Why is he called the Word? Why is Jesus the Word? Jesus is God's vehicle of expression to us of who God is, how he feels. And I don't know, I talk about this all the time, and I can't say it enough, but the gospel message is so radical. I mean, do we really realize how radical this thing is of being a Christian, being a son of God? I mean, this is a radical gospel. The gospel message actually tells us. I mean, guys, this is nuts. I mean, this is crazy. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, son of God, just woke up? Right? Like, really? Son of God, brushing his teeth? Wow. The gospel message actually tells us that when you were born the second time, you were actually born from above. You were actually born from above. So Jesus said, when you pray, pray what? Our Father. Wow. He pulled us in. Like, I'd be like, excuse me. You're the Son of God. Did Jesus say, our Father? This is what he really meant. This is the radical gospel. Your dad. Now, you have a dad, physical, earthly dad, right? But now you have a new dad. Now you have a brand new father. You have a new, perfect father. You can let your old dad off the hook now, guys, because you have a perfect heavenly father. Your father is a superhero. I mean, he's big, he's strong, he's wealthy, he's awesome, he's beautiful, he's magnificent, he's absolutely perfect, he's absolutely gorgeous, he's so strong, and he cares about you so much, and he is your dad, for crying out loud. I mean, that's amazing. Guys, I'm just telling you, when you read this stuff, if you don't take this really, really personal, like really take it personal, like, how can I make it more personal? How can I see it in my mind, taste it, smell it, touch it? How can I make this so personal? I mean, that is what we're trying to do here. That is so important. It's just going to be words on a page, right? I mean, I have taken things people have said, my dad, and things that have happened in my past, and I've taken that personal, and I've walked that out for years, right? I have the words of God here. I need to take that really personal. Let that go to the very bottom of my skinny little heart and let it blossom right on out of me. Otherwise, it's like someone studying a map, studying maps, getting into maps, but they've never actually gotten on the road. Like, whoa, that's an overpass. That's crazy, right? I mean, could you imagine that? Someone studying cookbooks, teaspoons, cups, this much and that, but they've never stirred a brew and tasted that, actually cooked a meal and ate it. Same thing, guys. God says, you're the Son of God. You're a daughter of God. And you just go, amen. Okay, back to my problems. Turn TV on. What? What? May it never be. May it never be. And see, we got to take it this personal, because who you are, out of who you really believe you are, is going to come out behaviors and actions and attitudes. That's why when you open your eyes, daughter of God, just open her eyes, look out, right? And you can hear the enemy. Boy, I hope she didn't start praying. Hope she didn't start talking to her dad, right? Hope she doesn't start walking in the cool of the day. Like, right? Son of God just woke up. Son of God coming into the living room, opening the curtains. Son of God lifting his city up, right? I mean, this is really my world. This is what I do. I do this because I can't believe it's true. It's truer than anything else. It's truer than anything else. Peter tells us to desire the sincere milk of the word. What does that mean? The milk of the word is how we grow. What little babies need? They need milk. They need a little num-num, right? They need milk. What's milk? What's the milk of the word? Here you go. Here's a big bottle of it, right? The milk of the word, my child, you are so loved. You're loved, love, 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 love. You're accepted. You are so accepted. You're forgiven of everything. All is good. All is well, right? Totally forgiven. You're so important. You're so important. And you're able to do anything I ask of you to do. You're able because you're my son, because you're my daughter. Security, significance, milk. Milk. And when I wake up, guys, I need milk. I have me a big old glass of milk when I wake up. I'm loved, accepted, forgiven. I'm important. I matter. And I can do what he asked me to do. There's my big drink of milk. And when I'm done with the milk, guess what I'm ready for? A great big fat steak, right? The meat of the word. The milk of the word is everything my Father's done for me in him. Who he's made me to be. All he tells me that I am. All he's provided for me. That's the milk. The meat of the word is all that he's going to do through me because I believe it. Wow, is that crazy or what? That's the meat of the word, guys. It's not about religion or any of that stuff. It's about believing what he's done for me, who he says I am, and living that out. That's the meat of the word, what he's called you to do because of who you are. And Romans tells us that those that are led by God are the sons of God. And that word sons is a Greek word meaning the adult child of God. I mean, a lot of us are adults here and we still have parents. How would you like to walk as an adult child of God? Amen. What do you want me to do today, Father? I'm an adult. May I take the car? Right? I mean, you're an adult. That's a completely different thing. We have responsibilities. There's a certain way we can walk. There's a certain way we can be and think. I'm thinking like my Father. I'm deciding like my Father. I'm doing my Father's business, right? This is the way an adult son lives. Jesus walked on this earth. He walked on this planet, on this dirt. And at the same time, he was still one with his Father. He was still one with God. And we are called to do the exact same thing. I mean, that's just mind-blowing. How can we think of anything else? You know? I mean, what Jesus prayed for more than anything else is that you would recognize and believe that you are one with him. Amen. You and him are one. And the rest of the New Testament begins to spell out how that looks, what that looks like, how that expresses itself, that union. He says things like a foundation and a building, vine and a branch, head and a body for crying out loud, right? Bride and a groom, all deep, deep relationships is what he's talking about here. Jesus died and he prayed for that he would have the ability, and he does, to create a brand new race, that the sons and daughters of God would walk this earth, and he's done it. And his cry, "It is finished," means it's done. That's talking about you being a daughter, me being a son. He's saying, "It's finished. It's done." And that, my friends, meets our deepest need for love and respect because we have a great, big, marvelous dad that loves us beyond all reason. Jesus tells us here, "Don't you understand anything you eat passes through the stomach and then goes into the sewer, but the words you speak come from the heart. That's what defiles you. From the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, lying. These are what defile you." He talks about these things that come out of our heart. So what does that tell me? I have to deal with the broken parts of Stan. Because his spirit lives in this body where I have a soul that has the same history, my old memories, my old life, my old ways of thinking, I have broken parts. And what defiles me is the unbelief that still rules and still has pockets of influence. The unbelief of what he's done for me still has strongholds in areas of my life. Does that make sense? So I have to heal these broken parts, and we are part of healing these broken parts in other people's lives. Many people here are ministers of helping heal people of their broken areas and their broken stories. And I know that I hear all the time, and I'm sure that you do, things that people are involved with, addictions that they have, tendencies that they have that can be shocking at first. Like, you're into what? Like, you do what? You know, how is that done? Like, and you can hear these things. But when you know their story, when you get in their shoes, when you hear the twists and turns, when you hear how they grew up and all the stuff that went on, it's like at the end, it's like, well, of course. You know, of course you do that. Their story makes sense, and your story makes sense. The things you do that you're so ashamed of and the ways you're broken make sense to you and your psyche. And it's so important for us to get a hold of the gospel and this powerful message and begin living out a new narrative, a new story. And so really quick here with the time I have left, I want to just walk you through a few little steps of kind of one of the ways that it's done. Okay? So just hear me out here. When my wife and I go to Hawaii, we're going to do some of this work and further some of this. And I just love doing this work, and I love doing this with people. And I just want to pray for you that God would help you right now for this to be real to you. And if you're taking notes, take notes. That's great. Do this in your own time, or do this with someone that God's bringing to mind right now, okay? All right, so the first thing, just settle down and just get real quiet. I kind of think of a snow globe and letting everything settle. Just get real calm. And you know that little red triangle I draw all the time? I get to where I'm centered into my identity, that I'm a son. I'm not anxious, I'm not afraid. I'm a son of God, or I'm a daughter of God for you. And let's get settled there. And I just become a calm observer of what's going on in my soul. I'm just totally relaxed. And I have to be a compassionate observer of my own self, my own ways. And to be able to see the wounded parts of us and parts of ourselves when we're triggered, you know, that part. Because that part, when you're triggered, where you go run and spend, when you go eat chocolate, when you go act out, when you jump on the computer, you know, whatever it is, that wounded part isn't actually an exiled part, a part of you. And that exiled part of you, I'm going to tell you, is a young part of you, a very young part of you. And so from that calm observer part of you, where you're sitting there relaxed, just invite that exiled young part of you into the light. Just tell you how I do that. So just come on in, son. Just come on into the light. Let me see you. Let me see you. I know you're used to me shoving you away, ignoring you, covering you with drugs, covering you with entertainment, shutting you down, but I'm asking you to come into the light, son. It's okay. And however you do it, allow the symptom to become some kind of metaphor or picture or an image or a personality. And, you know, we do this all the time, guys. When we dream, your mind is making your day into pictures. It's making your mind into metaphors and images. It's processing. And so we're just allowing that to come. Some people have told me, you know, they see a crib, and it's dark. The details really matter. The dark room, it's a big room, and it's empty. And he's all alone. And he's so afraid of that aloneness that he can't even cry. He's just there alone in a dark room. I've heard stories of little girls with torn dresses, and they're soiled, and they're ashamed. I mean, I've seen and heard all kinds of things, things I could never make up. But the idea is, what do they look like? What does the scene look like? What's the mood in the picture? What are the details? You know, the details really matter. And to let your psyche, let your soul just do some art therapy. You know, when I'm triggered or when I'm feeling that loneliness, when I'm not acting out, it surfaces so much easier. And there's going to always be this part of you that interrupts, that says, oh, this is stupid. Oh, this is silly. Oh, this is dumb. And it's actually a part of you trying to protect you from being further ashamed. And I have to just say, okay, just, it's okay. And get them to stand down, get that part of me to stand down. It's okay. I'm not going into shame here. And let this young part of me express itself. And then when you really feel the time is okay, say, what happened to you? Tell me. What do you most need? And you'll know it. You'll see it. And the crazy thing, guys, is there's no timeline to this wounded little young part. It's still there. It's still just as wounded as it was when it happened. The timeline is right there. It can be healed right now. It's that fresh. And then we invite the Lord in. That beautiful, beautiful light of His presence, the beauty of His perfect love, the majesty of who He is. He's a king that anyone would want. A king whose love no one could doubt when He just looks at you. You let Him in the room. And guys, sometimes He'll come in the room and He'll have something behind His back, and it'll be like a new toolbox for a boy, or a crown, or a brand new dress. And I shared before how one time I got to sit down and be part of a family photo in the family of God. And I was royalty, and I was regal. And I had the same family jawline and the same family traits as all that I sat with. I was a royal son of God, and I got to take a picture with Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and my great big Father. And at the count of three, I took that picture. 1, 2, 3, and the snapshot was on. And I'm permanently in the family of God. You know, whenever you get that picture of that beautiful Jesus healing you in whatever way He brings you the answer, you got to hold that image, guys. You got to hold that image. You got to hold it, and you got to bond with it, and you got to grab it. Ephesians says that the best thing you can do for God is embrace all He's done for you. And I speak that to you guys tonight. Let that rewire your brain. And you walk that out. I walk that family photo out, guys, in the morning. I walk it out at noon. I walk it out in the evening. I sleep with it. I wake with it. It's mine. It's mine. It's mine. And you got to hold on to that. And you begin to let that be your new narrative. And so I close this session out to just tell you, don't let sin reign in your mortal body. In other words, don't let unbelief of who you really are have a say, have a reign. Don't let it reign your mind. Don't let it reign any part of you. You really are His beloved daughter, so beautiful and magnificent. He's so pleased with who He's made you to be. So pleased. He's thrilled. He gets an inheritance. Ephesians says God gets an inheritance in us. He's so tickled to death with what He gets out of you being His. That's absolutely true. Take that personal. Take that home. Don't ever let it go, guys. And I want you to know, on my tombstone, I want it to say, here's Sam Bourne, the Son of God. That's my call in this life, is to tell people who they are, what God's done. Isn't that beautiful? It's called the gospel. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Stan.